18 minutes now before 11 o'clock. And I'm glad that you're tuned in this morning because we have the opportunity to hear from a great storyteller. He's here from the Choctaw Nation, and he lives in Texas. We'll talk a bit about him and his background and what is happening at the Three Rivers Storytelling Festival coming up in just a moment. I'm thinking, why don't we close the door here just so we can make sure that we have a nice environment. Just take a moment to do that. Because I want to be sure you're really able to concentrate on the stories, that you're about to hear. So allow me to present to you Tim Tingle.
Thank you. It is it's great to be here. I live, raised in the Gulf Coast of Texas, a member of the Oklahoma Choctaw Nation, and I want to start off with sharing the most traditional, most oft-told Choctaw story of all, and I want to do something that I have never done before. I sometimes tell a story and give audience members or workshop members, as I did yesterday at the festival, permission to tell the story, but I've never done it to an unseen live radio audience before, so I don't really know who I'm talking to, but I'm going to give everybody listening to this story full permission from the Choctaw Nation to go you forth and tell it. It's a simple trickster tale. And I think you can access it later if you need a refresher on it, but a tight listen and you'll be able to do it. It's a fun story for all ages. Long ago, in the land of the Choctaws, there lived Rabbit. And Rabbit was a fine fella, had lots of friends, but he drove most of them away because he had a serious problem. Rabbit just wouldn't stop talking. He would talk on and on and on and on and on. And there was also Fox, and Fox was not like Rabbit. Fox was responsible. He had a foxy wife. He had four fox children. He lived in a fine fox house, and every morning he would go down to the river to fish for catfish. He would sling that fishing line out and reel it back in, knowing that if he caught just enough fish to feed his family, his wife would have that skillet popping with grease. She would cornbread batter that catfish, make corn pones and things that you might not even be able to get in Pittsburgh except in certain areas. So when the story really began, oh, I almost forgot to tell you, fish, once it's caught, before it's fried, it smells pewee bad. And that fishy smell worked itself all the way around the woods to the nose of that old rabbit. And Rabbit said, "Smell like fish to me." So he went hip-hoppity, 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 right in front of Fox. And he said, "Give me that fish." And Fox said, "No way." And Rabbit went on and on. He just wouldn't stop. Oh, I almost forgot to tell you. This was back so far long ago that Rabbit had a long, beautiful, bushy tail. And I'm glad I remembered that because it's important later in the story. And Fox said, "This fish is for my family. You can't have it," but that rabbit just wouldn't stop talking. And finally, Fox took a look at that tail, and he said, "Rabbit, I tell you what. If you go down to the icy part of the river, cut a hole in that ice, and put your tail in it, the fish will come along, they'll grab it like a fishing line, and you can flip those fish on the shore, you'll have all the fish you want." And Rabbit said, "Won't that be cold?" And the fox said, "Yeah, but you'll get used to it." And Fox picked up his fish, and shoo, he was gone. Well, Rabbit went down to the river, hip-hoppity, hip-hoppity. He stood and looked at the icy river, and then something went growling right behind him. He didn't want to step on that ice, but something was growling. He looked over his shoulders, then he realized it was his tummy growling. He was hungry, so he cut a hole in the ice, and he sat down on it, and he put his tail down there, and he started shivering and shaking. Nothing happened. He could see the fish swimming and avoiding his tail. Finally, the sun went down. It got freezing cold, and something grabbed a hold of his tail. And Rabbit remembered. He went flipping that tail, but there weren't any fish a-flying. He flipped harder. And then finally, they grabbed so tight, and Rabbit thought, "I've got the biggest, most humongous fish. All I have to do is count 1, 2, 3, jump up, and I'll never have to work again. I'll bust that fish through the ice." So we counted. A Jaffa, Ducklow, Oh, I'm sorry. I'm speaking to a predominantly English audience. I'll go ahead and count in English then. One, two, three. He jumped up and busted right through the ice and landed on the shore and did a little rabbit dance, looking all around, but he couldn't find the fish. Finally, he felt a breeze where he'd never felt a breeze before. And he felt back, said, "That's funny. My tail always takes care of little breeze. Where is my tail?" And then he saw it waving back and forth underneath a river of ice. And that's how the Choctaw people say Rabbit lost his long tail and has that little powder puff of a tail just like he's got today. And they also say, if you're a student sitting in the back of the classroom and your teacher is trying to give you a perfectly curriculum-designed lesson to elevate your state standardized test scores beyond belief, and you're back there talking, you better be careful. You're going to lose your tail. And that's how the Choctaw tell it, somewhat.
That's Tim Tingle at the Saturday Light Brigade. What a great, great story.
How many people, roughly, of
Choctaw heritage are living in the United States?
In the Oklahoma Choctaw Nation, it's around about 200,000.
Oh, it's quite a bit.
Yeah.
More than I would have expected. And if folks... Is there a center piece of community life? Would it be in Oklahoma or Texas?
There are two Choctaw nations that have their own governments, their own elected leaders. The original Choctaw Nation is in central Mississippi, and we were the first that were moved out by Andrew Jackson on the Trail of Tears back in the 1830s. And if you're Oklahoma Choctaw, then you're directly descended from someone who survived that Trail of Tears. So it was my great-great-grandfather.
I was going to ask you who in your family would have been part of that, because it's I hope it's okay to talk about.
I
would have stories about the trail from your personal family made it to you through
Absolutely.
Generations.
Yeah.
Just a horrible, horrible time.
And one of my purposes is I was at the Smithsonian, the Indian Smithsonian, just about a month ago, and the director gave a talk to a group of researchers that I'm part of, and he said people that show up at the Smithsonian, Native American Smithsonian, he said that you would be appalled at the stereotypes they bring, but what we have to do is meet them on the bridge they cross on, because they are here, and try to lead them gently to a new understanding. And so that's what I try to do when I tell. I have a Trail of Tears story that can be a full 45 minutes or it can be a 15-minute piece. But what I try to get across, first off, is that Native people are people, And the second thing is Indian people have always been modern people for the times. That the teepee, the chasing the buffalo and all that was way, way less than 5% of American Indian people. But somehow that's the image that comes to mind. So when I tell the trail story, I create a family, and you really like and you enjoy this family, and you're not even aware that they're in 1830. The way I tell the story is first person, and people are thinking I'm telling family memories. And then as things begin to happen, you realize that this is historical, and then finally you recognize we're on the Trail of Tears. So we all accompany on the trail. So the things that happen to the audience as well as to the teller.
Tell me a little more about your life. Have you always been telling stories the way you – not now you're a professional storyteller, but I think, right? But how about before?
I always told stories. I always read. I always wrote. Even before I entered elementary school, I'm so old, I'm 61, that we didn't have kindergarten back when I went to school. But by the time I could read and write by the time I entered first grade, and I was always making up little stories, writing little pieces of poetry. I loved to read. And on my dad's side, we didn't – not that far from my grandmother, who was Choctaw and raised in Oklahoma. My dad was also born in Choctaw Country in Oklahoma. But we moved to the Texas Gulf Coast, And we were always taught the stories, the Trail of Tears story. We were always told memories that my grandmother had from boarding school. And there were some basic Choctaw things that we were taught, but we were always taken out into the big thicket, deep into the woods for a long 3-4 day camping trip and told these stories. And then we were always warned, your grandmother doesn't want these stories outside of this family. So when you go back, don't tell your friends, don't tell your teachers. Our Choctawness is for us to know and us to tell our family. And the basis of it was things that had happened to her when she went to boarding school, different punishments for speaking the language. And although it's a now in today's climate, it sounds like a horrific kind of racial thing to say, but she would not allow her children to date people of a dark complexion because she wanted us to be able to blend in and not suffer what she had suffered from. And this is not an uncommon story across Indian country.
And it is. It's an incredible. I think of things that I was taught about Indians, the word used sure. when I was growing up, yeah. that are outright
it's
false.
A cool word. Indian is a cool word.
I'm not that old, and I mean, there's a lot of remediation that needs to yeah. be done in terms yeah. of people. Well, what did you go on to do for a living after you got out of school?
Well, I got an English degree from University of Texas, English Lit. I'm right in the middle of Texas, which the primo foreign language is Spanish. So I, of course, chose French. So I was very job marketable. I had an English Lit degree, no desire to teach, and my foreign language was French. So I managed a series of fast food stands. I worked with my dad on the pipeline. I drove a milk truck. I danced with a company on the National Touring Endowment. We were Martha Graham, Merce Cunningham based.
Huh.
I had a fast food processing company.
And let me just
all these things.
It just interject. Sounds like that dance company was not necessarily Choctaw or Native
oh,
American.
Oh, not at all.
Because
no.
some people might be immediately thinking that, but if it's Merce Cunningham, it's nothing like
it
that at
New
all.
It was New York based. The leader of the company, yeah. Michael Sokoloff, had danced with Merce Cunningham. So, no, it was not at all Choctaw yeah. related. I was still listening to the stories, beginning to recognize. When I got married, had a son, couldn't wait for him to get to elementary school, so now we could discuss American Indian history, and I saw the textbooks he had, and there was nothing. I mean, it was nothing, absolutely nothing, not even the Trail of Tears even mentioned. So I started volunteering to go to his school to share some Indian histories, and then I would get invited to other schools and then other schools. And this was when he was like 8, and he's 34 now, so this was a while back. And then I realized there was about a 100-year gap in which almost nothing was written about the Choctaws. So I started, I owned my own company then, so I could take off a few days. I started traveling to Oklahoma, to Mississippi, to Alabama, all over Texas, places where I knew Choctaws were, and I would seek out older people. And now I have over 200 hours of recordings of memories of different families telling their boarding school, their stories.
That's wonderful. If you're just joining us, Tim Tingle is here, and he's here as part of the Three Rivers Storytelling Festival. And we are going to give you all of the details about the festival in just a few moments so that you can jot them down. And you'll have the chance to see and meet and hear Tim at no charge whatsoever a little later today as part of the festival. Can you share another story?
Yes.
Should say, would you please share another story? I know you can.
I will be glad to.
I've never met anybody who I have no doubts of your ability whatsoever. Now that I know he's an English Lit major, I have to be careful.
Oh, yeah.
Would you please?
Oh, no. English Lit is not about grammar. Trust me on that one. Since the first story I said was kind of a trickster and a lighthearted tale, I want to just share an image that I use oftentimes to move it to another way of thinking, that somewhere in Arkansas years ago, there was a farmer and he had a farm in a valley surrounded by the Ozarks, and he liked to get up in the morning and brew his own coffee and step out on the front porch long before the sun rose and look up at the mist and the fog rising off the mountain. And on one morning, he heard a sound just coming through the clouds, and it was a sound. He listened. At first he thought he must be imagining it, and he woke his wife up and brought her out on the porch, and they sat down and held hands and listened, and then they realized it was not imagination. It was a sound of a song they sung at church often, but it was not sung in a language they understood. And they woke the children up, and they brought them out, and they all stood up and stepped out in the yard and looked up and expected light to come and something to come descending from the clouds. But all that descended was a sound. It was a beautiful sound they would never forget. Shalom, Bisholitopama, Ishmitipu, Lachan, Hatakilban, Shapiyan, Ishbi, Yokapa. There were 1,000 walkers, Choctaw walkers, on the Trail of Tears, and they were hidden by the pine trees and the clouds and the mist. But that song they sang, as close to a national anthem as Choctaw people still have today, it came floating down on that Arkansas farmer and his family. And for generations past, almost 200 years later, the descendants of that farmer, they call that Sacred Mountain, and they talk about that day. And they'll never sell that farm, even though it sits empty now and the house is used once or twice a year. It's a sacred mountain, just as that song and those people are walking in the light.
Tim Tingle, thank you, Tim. The Three Rivers Storytelling Festival got underway yesterday. It's been going on for 10 years now. Northland Public Library, Sandra Collins had an idea a long time ago, and Mary Morgan Smith continues that tradition with a whole bunch of other folks. And here with us, in addition to Tim this morning, Greg Weiss. And Greg, I don't know if you'd like to speak about the festival how's he going to say no after I said that? But it got underway yesterday, and you've got some great tellers this year, Greg. Some great local folks, including Sean Miller, Barra the Bard, Maquette Vallant, Scott Pavel, Edmund Lopresti, and Joe Woes, but also Granny Sue Holstein, Kate Danahar coming in as well.
Yeah. Well, the festival is one of the true treasures of the Pittsburgh area and any area. Storytelling festivals, they're unfortunately the kind of the best kept secret in a world where everything is driven by technology and everything moving so fast paced that when you just get a chance to sit in a tent or in a room and listen to a person in front of you with nothing more than perhaps a microphone and share a story, and they take you to a totally different place. They take you on a journey with them, and it's as powerful as anything you could see in a movie theater or listen to on a CD or watch on a DVD or something along those lines, or on a computer screen. And storytelling has endured for thousands and thousands of years, and as a result, something like this Three Rivers Storytelling Festival, it's just a marvelous opportunity for people to come out and for free to spend a day and to just hear these people, from Texas, from Philadelphia area, Kate Danaher. But Kate, she takes us into Ireland. She tells the stories of Eamon Kelly and brings you to another place entirely. It's part of the magic of storytelling. It's the cheapest way to travel. Yeah. mind trips take you anywhere.
Yeah, it really is in an era where so much communication has changed, and this transcends everything. And to some extent, because you're listening to the radio right now, we may be preaching to the choir, so to speak. But the human voice and original thinking, and done so live is a remarkable experience. And to be able to do this at no charge at Northland Public Library, if you can get to the Ross Park Mall, you can get to Northland Public Library. It's just a stone's throw away along McKnight Road. You turn up Cumberland, if memory serves me right, and there you are. And we're simply Google Northland Public Library, but it's easy to get to in the near North Hills, as I like to call it. And lots of activities today. There'll be an outdoor concert tonight where you can sit and listen. Tim himself, if you can't make it tonight, is going to be performing at noon on the indoor stage and at 3 on the outdoor stage. I hope I've got that right.
That was changed to 1 o'clock, Tim, because of being down here
Make sure we're back in time. Thank you for doing that. But look for him this afternoon. If you show up early, you'll still hear good performances. And then after the North Hill Symphony Dixieland Band at 6:30 to provide a little mood music and a little additional festive atmosphere, the evening concert will start at 7:30. And I can't congratulate Greg, you, and Mary, and everybody involved. This has become one of the top regional festivals in the country. It's really exciting.
Yeah. Pittsburgh has a very strong storytelling tradition and some amazingly talented storytellers. And I say that without patting myself on the back, because I don't even live in Pittsburgh. I live in Chicago.
Oh, I forgot about that. Yeah.
Yeah, I was born and raised in Pittsburgh, and my Pittsburgh roots, like anyone, again, preaching to the choir, anyone who's from Pittsburgh knows that you come home. Mm-hmm. You have to come home to Pittsburgh. But when I found out there was a storytelling festival here, and as a teacher and a storyteller, it icing upon icing on the cake, as far as I was concerned.
Well, I hope you'll consider checking out the festival. Today's the only remaining day. You can go to northlandlibrary.org. I think that's the best place to go for information to learn more about it. And let me just tell you, if you're tuning in for Morgan Stewart, or if you're tuning in to hear our Green Compass piece scheduled for 11, both are coming right up. I deliberately decided to color outside the lines just a teeny bit today and to make sure we had a time to hear one more story from Tim. And Tim, I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for sharing and for being here this morning.
It's great. It's great to be here. Yeah. I appreciate it. I'm a long way from home, and that's sometimes where the stories are best told from other places.
Well, we'll turn it right back to you, and thank you for being here.
Okay. My family stories are always important to storytellers, and one of my favorite family stories is about my dad. And I also enjoy sharing this because Indians are modern people, and I like to focus on that. My dad fought in World War II, and when he came back from World War II, he brought a collection of Steinbeck. Because in the old days, and up through, I think, even the Korean War, but certainly through World War II, in backpacks in every level of the service, they were given classic pieces of literature. So between battles, people might be reading Hemingway or Steinbeck, and they rolled up two or three books, and they would stuff them in their pack. So my dad came back and really liked Steinbeck. We were basically from Oklahoma, so he was a Grapes of Wrath fan. And he had a collection of Steinbeck that he would keep in our little wooden house right above the towels leading to the bathroom. And he, every Friday evening, other than football time in Texas, every Friday evening outside of football season, we would all four boys be sitting watching the television. My big sister would babysit, and my dad would get dressed up in his suit to take my mom out 20 miles to a restaurant in downtown Houston. He would start the station wagon, come back, and the ritual was the same. He would say, "Turn the TV off," and we'd all fuss about it. And he'd say, "Sit up on the sofa. You know what we're going to say." He would stare at us, and he would say, "You know where I keep my Steinbeck books? You know, there are words in those books that are not meant for children to hear, and you wouldn't understand them anyway. And, there are stories and situations, adult situations, in those Steinbeck books that you're not supposed to know about. And if I come back and I catch you reading the Steinbeck books, you have had it." And then he'd look at his watch, and he'd say, "And I won't be back a minute before 11:30. That's a promise." and he'd climb into his station wagon and drive away. And we'd send my little brother to the window to make sure they were gone. And as soon as they were gone, we'd hit the Steinbeck. We'd open the Steinbeck, and every one of us looking for the dirty words and looking for the adult situations. And by the time I was in the seventh grade, I had read everything that John Steinbeck had written up to that point. And I remember when I was in the seventh grade, my dad and I were out hoeing around the corn, and he took his hat off and he kind of slapped it. And one of his favorite books and mine too was Of Mice and Men. And he looked at me, and this is a repeat phrase all through Of Mice and Men. He looked at me and he said, "What are we going to do now, George?" And without even thinking, I said, "I don't know. What are we going to do now, Lenny?" And then I grabbed my mouth and I looked at him, because I was playing the role. You know, we were doing it. And he kind of laughed and put his hat back on and put his arm around me. And we went back to chopping corn. That was just his way of letting me know he understood that we were reading the Steinbeck.
Tim Tingle, thank you. And look for him at the Three Rivers Storytelling Festival, August 6th and 7th. It got underway last night, continues today. And Greg Weiss, thank you for bringing Tim along today.
Oh, thank you. My pleasure.